Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class streamed live on March 21st, 2020. This is the second talk on the Ratana Sutta on taking true refuge. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. You all notice that I changed today's class from the Continuing with Our Truth of Happiness Dhamma study to this sutta, just because it's so apropos for right now. And it reminds us that while this is an extraordinary event that we're going through right now on planet Earth, it's also common. It's part of just having a human life. These things occur. And this sutta is such a great reminder of that. The Buddha and his Sangha and the people in northern India at that time went through just about the same thing that we're going through. And the Buddha's response is wonderful. So let me just read it. This is the Ratana Sutta from the Samyutta Nikaya 2.1. This sutta is often called the Sutta on the Triple Refuge or the Three Jewels, but you'll see what that is. At that time, in the city of Asali, there was widespread famine and spreading disease. There were many dead bodies as the conditions overwhelmed the ability to properly dispose of the bodies. The local citizens sought out the Buddha's help, who was nearby in Rajagaha. The Buddha arrived in Visali a short time later with a large number of monks, including Ananda. Just before the Buddha's arrival, torrential rains helped the situation somewhat by cleansing the landscape of rotting corpses and clearing the air and water. It was a pretty grim time. Again, much like our time. And the way the Buddha responds here is so telling, and it might be missed. And so I'll give you the preview. Notice how the Buddha first takes care of the physical needs of the people, and then he teaches them the Dhamma. It's not just one and it's not just the other. The Buddha understands that in order for us to even develop the Dhamma, we first have to practically attend to our needs. And the Buddha said that every human being needs four things: food, clothing, and shelter, and medicine. But those things are almost always readily available to us as human beings, as long as we don't want too much of those things. So again, right now, we can see the hoarding that's taken place the last couple weeks. And we've laughed about a little bit about hoarding toilet paper, etc., even within our Sangha. But we understand where that's coming from. And Tim made a good point. He says he understands this because we now understand human nature, because we understand the nature of our own ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And so when we see things like this, the panic buying or just the general fear that people are living in, we understand that this too shall pass. And we also understand that no matter how difficult things get for us as individuals, we can maintain a calm and peaceful mind because we have a practice that is designed to do so. It's not something arbitrary or something that we have to wish for, that if things get worse tomorrow, we're still going to be able to maintain a calm and peaceful mind. We will be, no matter what occurs. Prior to the Buddha's presenting the following discourse, he instructed his attending monks to walk through the city and to do what they could to ease the physical sufferings of the citizens, and to individually present the Dhamma. At the formal teaching, the Buddha then presented a way to bring true refuge from the stress and suffering of the world, and to put an end to all self-inflicted dukkha. The Buddha's words: may all beings assembled here have peace of mind. That one sentence is so profound, because the first thing he says to this large group of people that have literally lost their minds, he's reminding them that the most important thing you can do right now is to regain control of your minds. And then he's not going to just say that. He's going to teach them how to do it. The Buddha continues, may all beings assembled here listen mindfully to these words. May you all radiate goodwill and loving kindness to all who offer help and understanding to you. We should all be doing that, shouldn't we? I was just thinking yesterday, I was talking to Maura, who's in the healthcare field, and I said, when this is all over, we should really have a ticker tape parade on both coasts with healthcare providers for what they're doing for us right now. But again, notice how the Buddha addressed that even then. May you all radiate goodwill and loving kindness to all who offer help and understanding to you. The second most important thing the Buddha is talking about is metta. The Buddha continues, understand this. There is no more precious jewel, no more refuge, no more comfort than the Buddha. The Buddha, again, the Buddha never held himself out as any kind of supernatural being or as a savior. He never taught a salvific religion. He taught a practical way of understanding what it means to be a human being. And so here he's holding himself out as a human being who actually awakened. There is no more precious jewel, no more refuge, no more comfort than the Buddha, understanding that a human being can actually awaken. I love this last line here. As woodland groves in the early heat of summer are crowned with blossoming flowers, so is a sublime Dhamma leading to the calm and peace of Nirvana, meaning an awakened state. The peerless and excellent awakened one, the teacher of true understanding, the teacher of the noble path is the Buddha. This is the one who awakened. I'm going to skip over a little bit of my commentary. Again, he's saying, if I did it, you can do it. The Buddha continues, and now there is no more precious jewel than the teachings of the Buddha, his Dhamma. Understanding this brings true liberation and freedom. The Buddha, calm and mindful, has experienced the cessation of clinging and desire. The deathless state of Nirvana has been attained. The Buddha teaches a noble eightfold path that unfailingly brings concentration, liberation, and freedom. There is no more precious jewel than the Buddha's Dhamma. So the Buddha first teaches us that as a human beings, we can awaken just as he did, but we don't even have to do it all on our own as he did. He gave us specific instructions on how to do it. And the emphasis here is to stay focused on the Dhamma and not get sidetracked into other teachings, which was also a problem during the Buddha's time. Remember, the Buddha lived on a major trade route for most of the time that he was teaching. And so there were always different teachers coming through there hoping to gain more followers. And just like we have today, trying to discern what is the Buddha's teachings and what's all the other things that are claimed to be Buddhism or even helpful in a so-called spiritual way, the Buddha's reminding us that if we're going to awaken as a human being did, using his example, we can do it. We can only do it by the way that he taught it if we're going to practice the Buddha's Dhamma. The second jewel, the Buddha continues, there is no more precious jewel than the Sangha. Understanding this brings true liberation and freedom. The virtuous ones who bring the Dhamma, they are the jewel of the Sangha. And by the way, that's not just me, and it's not just our new teachers, it's all of you. Because as soon as I'm done talking, we are going to do what we always do, which is support each other in practicing the Dhamma. It really is remarkable what's developed here and what's online here this morning. Just really remarkable. They are the jewel of the Sangha. Those with steadfast minds, free of clinging, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Those that understand with wisdom the Four Noble Truths, they are the jewel of the Sangha. We are the jewel of our Sangha. Those that gain true insight and abandon self-delusion, doubt, and indulgence in meaningless rites and rituals, they are the jewel of the Sangha. Those beyond despair and evil doings, they are the jewel of the Sangha. And think about that one line today. Those that are beyond despair and evil doings, meaning it might be taking advantage of situations right now, they are the jewel of the Sangha. They're also the jewel of society right now that's going to get us through, isn't it? The people that even though they might have an overwhelming concern for their own well-being, still have the wherewithal to think of the next person. And we're all doing. And by the way, I got to thank each and every one of you for all the support you keep giving me all the time. It's never lost. So thank you. And we keep doing it for each other, don't we? We're doing it right now with each other, supporting each other this morning in these teachings. The Buddha continues, those whose understanding arises from the support of the Sangha, who can no longer conceal the truth from themselves due to the Sangha, they are the precious jewel of the Sangha. So we do that all the time. By our own example, we help the new ones that are always coming into our Sangha to just, by our own example, to realize, yes, this can be done. And they can see through us in the way that we're holding ourselves. How wonderfully fortunate we are to have these teachings and to be able to develop it. I think one of the remarkable things in my life, There's two components of it. One is that I was able to come find the Dhamma, that the Dhamma is still available today, because it doesn't have to be. There's nothing that says that the Buddha's Dhamma should have been preserved as well as it has been, but it has. But the second important component of that is that I have a mind that can understand it. And it's not that I have some kind of special mind. I don't. I'm an ordinary human being, just like Siddhartha Gautama was, just like we all are. But the Buddha taught a human Dhamma. And any human being who takes to the Dhamma as intended, as he taught it, can develop the Dhamma. And we're all an example of it, especially today, especially this morning. Those whose karma is extinguished, meaning all ignorance is abandoned, those whose karma is extinguished, the future of no concern, with rebirth ending, due to the support of the Sangha, this is the precious jewel of the Sangha. That's the end of the sutta. The Buddha, excuse me. The Buddha concludes that very powerful sutta by just reminding us how lucky we are, how fortunate we are to have each other and to have the Dhamma still in its authentic form, still available to us. So thank you for listening to the sutta. If any of you, and kind of replicate if we were still in Cross River meditation in our physical place, if you have something to say, open your mic and just maybe between individuals, you can say, hey, you want to get in here. But we'll start with Michael and Julia. How are you, Michael? Julia? I have unmuted your mic. No, I haven't. You might have to do it, Mike. Can you unmute your mic? Oh, there it is. I think this is just a little delay in the transmission.
It's a very stressful moment there. I was like, able to live the Dhamma and not succumb to it. In relation to obviously what's going on, and I guess I'll be somewhat redundant as to what I had said last week, but you know, Julia and I actually we go through the day, and we are aware, you know, of the Dhamma in our lives. You know, we're aware of it. We talk about it. We don't veer off that path, or we try not to veer off that path. And that's like the, what I'm talking about, like the full scope of the Dhamma also, because again, like, you know, we understand the depth of the Dhamma, you know, the introspective side of it. And, just like when you had mentioned, I think it was last week or whatever, you had used the word, the word you used, because I get caught up on words, but I think we get a better understanding when we look a little bit deeper into things. And like you had used the word uncertainty, you know, and for some reason that word just like made me think, oh yes, you know, like, you know, uncertainty is kind of a very subtle discontentment that might be existing in you. You know what I mean? It's kind of a subtle thing when you're not certain. But again, it creates stress and suffering. You know, so it's just my thing, and I said, like with Julie here, and the way we go about our days, like, we constantly check on the quality of mind, you know, that where is our quality of mind, you know, and to try to maintain that peaceful, you know, way that the Dhamma teaches us to follow. So, and being sometimes like, again, like it's deeply introspective, and I know I, you know, probably sound like a broken record because I keep on going back to the same concept, but I truly believe that you know, the idle chatter that goes on in the mind, the ill will, not that I have any ill will, I'm just telling you, but as you said, like all these things that are part of our mind, they have to be, you know, you have to recognize them, you know, and so we try to do that. I try to do that, and just being aware moment by moment and just doing the best we can each and every day.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Good morning, Julia.
I wrote down some things from the sutta, because the sutta is very beautiful and very grounding. It helps ground us all, you know.
I agree.
By the Buddha's words, that it's very beautiful. Of course, peace of mind, that's the first thing that is the most important thing to keep in a times like this. I like that the Buddha said also to radiate goodwill and kindness. You know, we have to be an example of the Buddha, you know, and try to live by radiating goodwill and kindness in such times, even though things might be stressful. And also the precious jewel of the Buddha, to remember that we have the Buddha, his essence by his teachings and his Dharma. Another thing, the cessation of clinging and grasping. And in times like this, when everything is changing, this is an evolutionary time period, you know. Things are not going to be the same once things go back. And that's what we have to all realize, that it will not be the same. It can't be. The way life is. Life changes and progresses, and we have to not try to cling and grasp to the way it was before, because it's progress. Even though it doesn't look that way right now, it may look negative. This still is is progress, and we're moving forward in a grand way, you know. And also, we have to remember that we have the sanctuary of the precious jewel of the Sangha, that we can always go back and be with like-minded individuals and practice the Dharma together. And the final thing, of course, is the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths. Not to forget that, because that's extremely important. That's the basis of everything.
Yeah.
So that's what I...
That's beautiful.
That's what I got from that sutta.
Excuse me. Well said, Julia.
Thank
beautiful.
You, John.
Thank you. Ram, how are you? I'll unmute you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ram.
Good morning. Thank you for the sutta. It's as timely as it gets.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have to go. I'm still working. I still go into people's houses. I still deal with the people that I work with. And having the Dharma there to guide me, it's been very good. My mind normally in these situations goes to, you know, the old end of the world apocalypse stuff, and it just hasn't been there at all. You know, I still have a pretty tight connection to my newsfeed, but you know, just to so I can guide myself and my family, that's the, you know, where this is going and what they should be doing right now. The beginning of this sutta, where he basically reminds us of metta. I had a little thing that I wrote about metta. It basically is that I realized that apart from metta as a guide to how to be in the world, it's also a very effective test as to how your practice is going. Because the metta is asking you to radiate kindness and offer ease to everybody, you know, in the most intense way that you possibly can. as a mother would protect her only child, so should you cherish all human beings. That's not an easy task. If you really get into that, you'll be running smack into all your issues with your clinging and your aversion. It really puts it to the test. And but you can use it as a reminder every time. If I feel like I am not going to cherish that nutcase over there, your practice is failing at that point.
Yep. Thank you, Ram. It's such a beautiful point. If there's an exclusion to metta for me, it means that I still have harboring hatred within me. And do I want to? No. I mean, it's that straightforward for me, and it should be for everyone. I think it is, because we know how hurtful it is for me, and then for everyone else. One of these days, I've been threatening this for a while too. I'll teach the story behind the development of metta and why we say it the way we said it, because it was a Buddha's counter to the Sangha's growing fear and jealousy of other groups in the area at the time. And that was his response. You know, if you want to overcome fear and jealousy and bitterness and envy, all that stuff, practice metta. It's the direct way. So. Thank you, Ram. Hello, Jen. I'll unmute you. No? There you go.
Hi.
How are you, Jen?
Good. Hi. I just want to echo what everybody else said. Thank you for this teaching, John. It's perfect. And it just really helps to depersonalize everything, realizing that, you know, this virus is an ordinary thing.
Yep.
And I think Matt and I were having a conversation about how it's just kind of just uncovered impermanence, but it's not like impermanence isn't always there. And the practice has been really valuable because there's been a lot of, for everyone, you know, difficult decisions to make every minute of the day, moving through your day. You know, should I go here? Should I do this? Should I do that? What, you know, should I go to work? Should I not go to work? And the practice is just so helpful in being able to navigate all those questions. So I'm really grateful to you, John, and to all of you Sangha members. And
thank you. Yeah, you kind of touched on it. Michael and Julia mentioned it, and uncertainty. Yeah, uncertainty is simply an aspect of impermanence. It only becomes a problem when we insist internally that the next moment be certain what's coming. When we let go of all of that, that's just a self-referential position, isn't it? You let go of that, and then each moment becomes much more meaningful because it's fresh. We're not dragging our own views into what's occurring right here and right now, and it changes things that are very, very subtle that we might not even notice, and it certainly changes these things that are right in our face, because we recognize this is just another occurrence. It's part of having a human life. We'll do the best we can with it, and we'll continue, but we can let uncertainty go. We don't need it. Tim's right there. Hello, Tim. There you go.
Thank you, everybody, for your comments. I think Julia really made me realize one of the underlying things that the Buddha is really discussing here, and that is this clinging and craving, because Julia is, I think, spot on in stating that the things will change, and you will see reluctance to that, and that's the essence of clinging and craving. Yeah. We've all been thrusted into, we've all been shown impermanence right smack into our face. Now, I think that we, as a Sangha, have been able to see that and address it in a peaceful way. Imagine people throughout your the state, throughout the country, throughout the world, who don't practice the Dhamma. Can you imagine how the stress and dukkha they're experiencing right now? And that's why we do have to be gentle and kind. And just like everybody has pointed out, that line where the Buddha says, "May all beings assembled have peace of mind." I mean, that's the foundation of mindfulness, the quality of your mind.
Yep.
And just an absolutely appropriate thinking for what's going on right now, and even to what Ram said, you know, these are the things that happen in our human life, and these things are all in front of us. So thank you very much, everybody in the Sangha, to John and to the Buddha and to the Dhamma. It's well appreciated.
Thank you, Tim. Trevor, how are you? There you go.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah, thank you for this teaching, John, and the thought that you put into our current times and how to support us. I really appreciate all the energy that you invest in our community, our Sangha behind the scenes, and also your emails. Are tremendously helpful. So thank you for all that time. And I'm really resonating with what everyone's saying here, Julia, Tim, Jen, about how we're just forced to recognize impermanence in ways maybe we haven't before. And I was thinking about what you've written, John, in I think both of your books, about how, I'm probably going to get the language wrong, but it was about how continuity and regeneration of circumstances masks impermanence. And sometimes we mistake continuity for permanence. And we're in a situation where those factors, characteristics that were giving rise to continuous states of affairs are rapidly shifting, and really recognizing all along everything's impermanent.
Yep.
So it's been a real opportunity to practice the Dhamma, and so grateful that I've become part of this Sangha, where it's focused on the Buddha's Dhamma, which had this topic of impermanence at its heart. So I'm feeling very grateful. I'm also, you know, noticing in the last week that I was a little bit too connected to my news feed and kind of was sensing this jittery quality. And it reminded me of what you've said too about right concentration and being disciplined with our practice and being thoughtful about how we're focusing our attention. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is based on metta and what you're teaching today, I think what's on my mind is how can I radiate loving kindness in this situation of social distancing and online? You know, what does that look like to make some concrete, tangible acts of metta when we're online in so many different relationships? So that's just kind of an ongoing question that's coming up for me as times are changing here.
Yeah, wow. Thank you, Trevor. I think it's always the most damaging thing we can do to children and adults is to ignore them. It does the most damage to the human psyche when that happens. And again, it's children and adults alike. Adults are a little bit better able to manage it. So the opposite is what's best, is to be mindfully present. And that's what the Dhamma brings us, the ability to, in a very, very ordinary way, but to be mindfully present. That's what makes a difference with people. I got a delivery just yesterday of a dinner from the Mexican restaurant in Milford. And I'm not trying to sound like, boy, I'm going to be the example for how to be, but just as an example, I made sure that I got there and I looked the guy in, you know, he's keeping his distance, I'm keeping my distance, to look him in the eye and ask him how he's doing and just spend a minute or two with people. And that's that doesn't take anything, you know, but a mindful presence. But and people feel it. You mentioned the other thing, Trevor, that continuity obscures impermanence, and that's the strategy that we use to mask impermanence from ourselves. This is always here. This from birth to death, this is permanent. And it's not, is it? We know even at the most basic level that a human body is completely different from one moment to the next. Millions of cells come into existence and millions of cells die off. The same is true with the governing principle of our consciousness. Each and every thought is new, except that we cling to it and we maintain that continuity within our thoughts, which obscures the impermanence of each and every thought. But a well-concentrated mind is able to see that, and you know, we're able to do it. Thank you, Trevor, for joining. Kevin, good to see you. I've unmuted you. Kevin wrote, Dr. Kevin. Kevin, can you, Dr. Kevin, can you unmute? I can't seem to do it on my end.
Yeah,
there you go. How you doing, Dr. Kevin?
I'm doing very well.
And all this, yeah?
I just wanted to really echo everybody else's thoughts and thank you all. It's great to be part of this Sangha. Such great support. And I think it helps us go forth into the world to exhibit metta and exhibit what we are learning. Mm-hmm. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, and for what you're doing. I know it must be really tough for you right now, but I'm glad you joined us this morning, too. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning, Becky. Yeah, you're going to have to unmute it on your end. I don't know why I can't do it here. Can you unmute your mic, Beck?
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Good.
Is that right?
Yep. Okay. You're good.
I haven't had a really calm and peaceful mind for the last week. I just have to admit. But I thank you for this sutta. And sitting here today, I've really started to realize what basically I've been doing to myself. I guess it's really the uncertainty that keeps creeping into my mind. And then there are times when I can call on the Dhamma and say to myself, one day at a time, but this talk, this discussion today has really helped me. And I really want to say thank you to Julia. What she said, really hit home. And it made me realize that when you're going through something like this, which really smacks you with impermanence right in the face. I mean, you may think you understood what impermanence was before this, but no, I don't think so. And when Julia said it's an evolution and that everything is going to be different, that made me feel so good, because I started to realize just because it's uncertain and everything is going to be different, we're going to need the Dhamma and we're going to need our cushion to go through it every day. But it doesn't mean it's not going to be better on the other side. It's going to be different. But the idea of evolution is evolution. I mean, you go through it and that's all you can do. And I just feel so much better after this, this talk today. And being able to realize that I have been practicing metta, but just not with myself. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, John. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Becky. Yeah, so a little meta towards yourself. Be gentle with yourself. That poem you sent me was just, do you happen to have it handy?
Oh, I actually read it last week,
it was really
you had
beautiful.
Already signed off. But in the meantime, I changed it a little bit. So yeah, I have it handy.
Could you?
Thank you. I really enjoyed doing it. Okay, here it is. This is my changed version from last week. A thicket of views. Siddhartha disentangled. Now see kind truth.
That's beautiful.
Peace.
That's wonderful. Everybody understands a haiku. That's a 575 cadence in there. It was really nice.
It's the only kind of poetry I've ever been able to write. Yeah. I think it's because it's so structured.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, though, isn't it? Thank you.
It is. Thank you.
Anthony, how are you?
Okay, let me unmute myself. Doing good, and I did want to say, that John, you're so great for continuing to give us the teachings online, and that I know people are, maybe some people aren't working and making money, but we really need to do what we can to support John, because he truly is the precious jewel of our Sangha, and you know he's continuing to give us his time. And just because we don't have a basket to contribute to, we should all make a pact to do our best and continue contributing online.
Thank you. Did I have a wheelbarrow out front? Thank you.
And, you know, this is tough. And my ways of trying to get through this is, you know, I try to remember when I think that about how my life is changing and how I wanted my last days in New Jersey to be different than this. That it's not about me, because we're all in this and we're all being affected in our own ways. Yeah. So we're really all in this together. And that gives me a little help. And also thinking about and focusing on, you know, what can I control? Because it's easy when you put on the news to start getting really worried and to spiral out and to get worried about the market and the economy and you know, whether people you love are going to get this. And I just try to focus on, well, what can I control right now? And to do what I can do when I need to do it, and not to just continue this endless cycle of worry, because it's not productive for me. And in fact, it's counterproductive. So I try to deal with what I need to when I can. And someone, I think it was Trevor, made an interesting point about social distancing, because it's really, if you think about it, not a good word, because we don't really want to socially distance. We want to physically distance. So I'm also struggling with how I make connections with people I pass on the street when we're not supposed to get close. And I think there are ways to do that. And I'm trying to find delights in this new reality, like this experience here of seeing people in their own homes is fascinating to me. I love Kevin's paintings. You know, I don't know how Tim created a Carl Sagan and cosmos behind him, but I love that. And just seeing people in their homes is a beautiful thing, and something I would have never been able to experience had this not happened. So I'm trying to find things like that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's pretty much all I have to say, but I love how you picked such a great sutta to talk about today, and I'm going to reread it and share it with Debbie when I get the chance. So thank you for that. And this has been a very uplifting thing. I hope we, you know, continue this.
Thank
well,
you, Anthony.
Get back into the Sangha, but as long as we need to do this, I hope we're all showing up and finding beauty in this, because I'm trying my best.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Please tell Debbie I said hello. And this really is remarkable to be able to do this this morning with all of you, to keep our Sangha going. You know, so thanks, Anthony. Hello, Liz. How is France? Wait a minute. I don't know why that. Can you unmute yourself, Liz? I don't know why the controls aren't working.
Yeah, Liz is muted.
Yeah, I can't unmute her.
There you go.
There you go. There it is. Hi, Liz. Hello, Liz. I don't think... Liz, do you have your audio on? You must. It's in there. No. Hello, Liz. You're not muted. No. Okay, I'm going to go to Kevin. Kevin, how are you?
Great, John. Thank you. Don't really have a lot to add. Just really appreciate you continuing to be our teacher, and especially in this time, appreciate the Sangha, and great to have the Dhamma to take a look at with all this time that we find ourselves with now. So,
yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for joining. Hello, my friend. How are you, Matt?
Hey, John. Hey, everyone. I really appreciate seeing everyone here today. This is a great example of how humans adapt to things occurring in their environment. So we posse up online, and we have our Sangha online, which is really cool. Thank you, John, for the teaching, and thank you for all the work that you do to keep this Sangha together. Some of the things that I talked about with Jen and John and Ron and Kevin, but this idea that, and some of you guys have hit on this already today, but that the uncertainty that's inherent in life hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there. It's still as impermanent and uncertain as it always has been since the beginning of time. So with these stop gaps and buffers that are removed from uncertainty, like politics, religion, markets, all these kinds of things in this kind of a situation are just poof, they're gone. So we have to look at just what's occurring. And, you know, we got to be gentle with ourselves, is that quality of mind is impermanent. So we're going to go through times when the quality of our mind is agitated or anxious or worried or scared. And we recognize that as occurring within impermanence as well. So try not to let the hindrances creep in and disrupt your practice. Expect that you're going to have feelings about what's occurring right now. And know that those feelings are impermanent, and those feelings are not me, not mine, not who I am. And they're to be, you know, examined in impermanence. So this is just great to be able to come together with all of you and share the Buddhist Dhamma. And, you know, I like what Anthony said about being able to look into people's lives a little bit and see your houses and your coffee and you know how you have, you know, and Rom's big living room over there.
I forgot to mention the mobile living room.
Right. So I just appreciate all you and John tremendously. So
well said, my friend. Yeah, it really is. It's remarkable. Mary, how are you?
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, John, for doing this. So much to me and obviously to everyone. I hope everyone can continue to participate and support. This has been very beneficial, just listening to everyone today. So many good things have been said. My business is in healthcare. All of my teams are on the front line in about a dozen hospitals across New Jersey.
Wow.
And I use the Dhamma you know, every day as we should, but I use it every day when I host sort of a command control center call that I have to have with my team every day for updates and issues, all kinds of things that are going on. My daughter returned home from Brazil this week. That took a lot of composure. It took about 6.5 hours to rebook her flight and to get her out because the borders were closing in South America. And I was able to use the Dhamma in a way that kept me calm and composed. I have someone trying to call me. Hold on. All right. Sorry. And then again, as I said, even after this morning sit, I have a 10 o'clock call with the people I report into about COVID-19. So it's a part of, you know, my daily life. David is in logistics and supply chain. And so it's a part of his daily life as well, all the uncertainty and the new things that are coming up every day. And I appreciate the Sangha and John and these great teachings and this wonderful sutta, because it's helping me beyond anything that I can articulate. I'm calm, I have a clear mind, and I'm able to lead others who have every right to be freaking out because they're on the front lines and now told they have to wear masks every day in their jobs. So I'm just so grateful that I'm able to be strong and be there for people who report to me and the people I report to, and then my family and everyone around. Thank you so much, everybody. This is
great. Online,
thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. Laura, how are you? Good to see you. Hello, Laura. There you go. How are you, Laura?
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good morning.
This is fun to be on the these applications and be able to connect with one another.
Yeah.
On the screen, so I'm entering new territory. I've been doing this with some friends from work as well, and so this is great. And you know, the three jewels are something that I pulled right out as soon as I found out that I lost my job and was faced with all of this kind of feeling of having the carpet pulled out from under you, and, you know, let alone just the state of affairs for society at large. You know, I am just so grateful for the sanctuary that the practice and these teachings and the Sangha provides for us moment to moment. And for that kind of knowing that life is just unfolding as it's unfolding, and that we all have the ability to really be in that place with ourselves. And that is what will, I feel like, just inherently is metta in a way. I feel metta from just knowing that the Sangha is there.
Yeah.
It's a thought that really gives strength at these times that feel so uncertain. And it's kind of this gift of, everyone's touched on it a little bit, like that impermanence is just a truth that we forget about. And here we are getting to live in that truth really in a deep way. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to really deepen my practice through this crisis, actually, and grateful for those who are working so hard to help one another right on the out in the world, you know, day to day. So, thank you, everyone. Good to
Thank you, Laura. Well said. Liz, do you have anything to say? Can you say anything? You're not muted, Liz. Well, I'm glad you're here. I can't think of a better example of taking refuge than what we just did here this morning. This is the Dhamma. This is taking refuge. And it's always here for us, isn't it? Once you establish the Dhamma in your life, it's there. That it's just an incredible resource to keep coming back to and keep bringing our minds back into our bodies and keeping them there, no matter what's occurring. I just thank you all for continuing with our Sangha. Thank you all for your support. We're going to continue like this for the near future. We'll see how long it's going to take, but we'll be back in Frenchtown at some point. I hope to see you all online again next Tuesday. And just have a wonderful day. You know, to use this time. This is a great time to just really be very quiet and learn to know who you are in relation to the world. It's a great opportunity to practice the Dhamma right now. Probably the best opportunity we've had in our lifetime, right here, right now. So. Does anybody else have anything to say, or does anybody here need anything from any other member of the Sangha or from the Sangha at large? Everybody's okay?
John, can I ask one thing?
Yes.
John, after the set, can you leave the Zoom meeting on for like 10, 15 minutes if anybody just wants to talk for a little bit?
The reason why I don't want to do that is it's very difficult to edit the end of a video as opposed to the beginning. And so I'm going to post it. But why don't we can hang out a little bit right now if you want.
All right.
You could stop recording.
Oh, I can?
We could stay in the meeting.
Oh, I can do that?
You might have it pre-programmed though.
Let me see if I can figure it out.
Well, yeah.
Wait, right here. I think, if I can read it.
If you stop recording.
I'm going to say goodbye right now in case it doesn't work.
I do jump on my 10 o'clock.
I've stopped recording, I think. I'll find out later, but I think it is, so.
Yeah, bye. I can't stay recording anymore.
Bye, Mary.
Bye.
Bye, Mary.
Thanks for all you do.
John, thanks for everything, Mary. John, are you going to put this one again on Tuesday, or are you going back to True?
We're going to start the Dhamma study back up on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, there was two talks on this week, Tuesday and today, and I'll post it as soon as I can. Like I said, Zoom is having trouble processing the videos right now, but I'm sure we'll get it figured out, and so it'll be posted up as soon as I can. The talk will be up later on today too. So.
Okay. The audio, you mean, will be up later?
The audio, today? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the audio from both classes will be up later on, I think. The very least, at the very latest by tomorrow, but they should be up. So. Yes.
John, are we going to continue with the aggregates?
Yes, the five clinging aggregates next week.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, some really good suttas on that.
I wanted to just add one other thing from what everybody was talking about. The thing that you have mentioned before, John, too, that many times when we're reading suttas to take the things into context of what was happening at that time or what the Buddha was talking about. For instance, the idea of ignorance, correct? It's not that someone's not smart. It's ignorance of the four noble truths. That's an
example.
So I think what's helpful maybe is to understand the context of what's going on today. You know, during 9/11, we saw things with our eyes, with our senses, correct? We saw, it was things that could be processed. This is something that's not, you can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't hear it. It's hidden. And so it is like the uncertainty that Michael was talking about. The uncertainty is magnified because, you know, it's the fear. You can just see people's fear just escalate because you cannot wreck recognize anything's wrong. You look outside and it's a beautiful day and everything looks like it did, but it's not. And so you can see the confused, how people can get confused about the impermanence and permanence of this particular situation we're in. We as a Sangha know that that impermanence is all around us all the time. Everything's constantly changing. And so I think everybody in the Sangha today has recognized that and are having that better time. I think it's up to us to try to, in that loving kindness and in that way to our fellow man, is to kind of emphasize that, yeah, well, you know, we can't see it, but it's there, but it's going to go away. And I've noticed that too, you know, like you even said, you know, the person came to the door, you know, people have this like, oh, you know, what do I do? How do I behave? Because there's the uncertainty.
Well, you finished that with the problem, Tim. It is fear. It's fear that gives rise to all of those things. And it's fear because of taking things personally. In other words, even if I happen to get the virus, I get the virus. You know, it's the virus isn't out there looking for me and hoping it can get me. It's as a consequence of having a human life, I could get this virus, or I could get, you know, the Sputnik could fall out of space and, you know, hit me in the head. None of us know that, and uncertainty is part of it. But when I don't take things personally, there's nothing that is capable of uncertainty that can affect me, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what occurs next. If I get hit by a truck, I get hit by a truck. If I hear a beautiful song, I hear a beautiful song. It's just what's occurring in this present moment. And what's occurring for all of us in this present moment is this worldwide thing that is engendering great fear because of the underlying uncertainty of it. But I saw the same thing, and those that are around my age will remember when the AIDS virus was just emerging, there was the same type of fear that just as a consequence of taking a breath, you were likely going to get the virus. And they believed that up until just a few years ago with AIDS, even though it was proven many years ago that that was ridiculous. And people are acting the same way, that just as a consequence of taking a breath, you're going to get the COVID-19. It's not true. It's still a very difficult thing to get. But because of fear and taking things personally, we think all of this stuff is coming at us. And so we react that way. I think it's true. I heard one of the guys, I think it might have been that Dr. Fauci, if that's how you say it, he said a few times, it's very, very unlikely that any one individual is going to get this thing and get sick from it. But, you know, there's so many people that are going to get it that you can't help but take it personally. Why? If I get it, I get it, and I'll deal with it then. In the meantime, I'm glad that I have this true refuge. Let me just talk a little bit more about that. Refuge means a place of safety and comfort. And so the refuge of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha resides in our minds and in a calm and peaceful mind. It's because of this refuge that we're able to maintain a calm and peaceful mind. It's because we've created a refuge within ourselves, within impermanence and uncertainty. We have this refuge to return to. And we have a quick return mechanism. Does anybody know what it is? I bet you Kevin knows, but anybody know what the quick return mechanism is?
The breath.
Yeah. We take a breath. And even if in these times, that one breath might not be enough to keep us in our body. So we take another breath. And if we find that we've still lost our mind, or we're talking with someone who's lost their mind, we take another breath and stay calm and stay peaceful, and we'll simply make better decisions. You know?
Hey, John, can I make a point, John?
Sure.
Touching on the aggregates, I guess we're going to get into them like next week or so, right?
Yep.
Julie and I have been reading about the aggregates and the relationship to the three marks of existence, and obviously the noble truths.
And origination.
Oh yeah. But you know, know, like from what I'm getting at is, especially with the aggregates, getting to understand them a little bit better, and what they serve us once we have a good understanding, and the way they're tied into the three marks of existence. And
come here.
There's a disenchantment that
come here
comes with understanding.
Sit down. Sit.
How the aggregates presents. There's a lot of static. But anyhow, so like again, going back, you know, to the aggregates, form is foam, perception mirage, feeling is a bubble, fabrication banana tree, and consciousness magician's trick. You know, like when you and they're without substance, or you know, they're void substance. So like, when I start thinking about these, I try to conceptualize these. It kind of like I can understand the disenchantment with it, you know, which obviously will lead to a dispassion, and they'll fade away in dispassion. But understanding those and the relationship to you know, impermanence and how, again, void and without substance, kind of helps me anyhow. Understand that, like, when feelings arise, that, like, well, it's empty. They're empty and with, you know, they're void and without substance. So, like, it just helps me understand it better, and I don't get stuck the way I used to get stuck, you know, in feelings and my thoughts. And
you don't get stuck anymore, Mike, because you're not clinging to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You understand that, and in relation to the five aggregates, you can look at each one of the aggregates, and you can see them in yourselves. We all have a form. We got this physical body. We create perceptions, and out of those perceptions, we form fabrications, and from those fabrications are maintained by consciousness. Just looking at ourselves, we're going to talk more about this next week, but there they are, and each one of those things is impermanent that we're using to describe our suffering with. We'll get deeper into this next week.
What's going on over there?
I don't know.
I have a right to know.
Come here, Boats.
You heard him say Bodie, and look who's coming here.
What is it? What is it?
I'm Lorna.
Did you see virus monsters out there? All right, folks. Well, I'm going to get going. See you all. Thank you so much for. I hope to see you on Tuesday evening. Stay safe and healthy. Bye bye.
Thank you, John.
Bye, John.
Thank you, John.
Quiet.
Don't bark it, Bodhi. Bodhi, no. Come back here. Market.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.